I've gotten some questions on my email that I sent out about getting in touch with the story parts of who we are. And some of you are wondering, well, what does that mean? And some of you have sent me stories, okay? So I love this one. I actually had about 10 of them to choose from this morning, so I want to give you an idea of what kinds of stories we're thinking about. This one's called Face to Face. I'm not going to say who wrote it because, you know, just protecting sources here. I work in the office of an 8th and 9th grade school. I meet and greet every late student that walks in the building. One-to-one, early in the morning, the kids are pretty honest with me. One morning, a male student arrived more than an hour late with no real excuse for his lateness. I wrote a pass and recorded his arrival time, noticing 6 other morning tardies within a 10-day span. I knew the student from the previous year, and even though we do not generally follow up on tardies, I decided to call his dad and ask if he knew about the tardiness of his son, which I thought, that's pretty risky. He didn't know about it, and he was grateful to know. That afternoon, the student walked by, looked me in the eye, and asked, "Who called my dad?" "I did." "Why did you call him?" "I care." He gave me the up nod and walked away. The next day, the student walked by grinning. He said, "Mrs. Ashes, oh, whoops. You don't need to call my dad. I'm here." I gave him a thumbs up and smiled. "I pray for him because he has no mom. She died 2 years ago. We have short face-to-face talks every now and then." So that's the kind of stuff I'm thinking about, you know, brushes that you have with God in your life. And I gave you those different topics and tried to expand on them a little bit to leave a little bit of room. And I'll explain why when we kind of put it all together. So love to hear from you on that. Daniel's out, so I get to do this. He's at a wedding in North Dakota, and I think they camped out last night, he and Delaine, so I bet you that was good for their marriage. We're finishing off Psalms, so I'm kind of excited about that, and the natural move from Psalms is to move over into Kings so that we can talk about Proverbs. And so that's going to happen probably over the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. So those first 16 chapters of 1 Kings tell the story of Solomon. And so that's really important when you look at Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon, because those are kind of up for us. And that's what relates to the book by book. We've been doing a little bit different podcasts because of what I've been talking about on Sunday mornings. So some of them are on Psalms related to what the kids are talking about. So next week they're going to talk about Psalm 133 and 134, which is the last Psalm of Ascents, by the way, of the 14 Psalms of Ascents that David put together and at least wrote part of them for the processions when they came into Jerusalem, which I just get this picture in my mind of what that would have looked like and how beautiful that would have been. So anyway, that's kind of where we're headed. You can invite friends along because it takes about a year and a half to get through the whole Bible. And the nice thing about the Daystreamers thing is that, I don't know if you've noticed with the Psalms, but I just read those and it popped up 3 Psalms every day and it got me thinking that direction, and that's kind of the idea. So I hope you're making use of those, and I found those to be a blessing. Also, we'll be talking a little bit about our celebrations that we have, and I've been reflecting on that. One of the things that we've done is been father-sons, and so what I said is that instead of talking about father-son campout next weekend, which is going to happen, and if you'd like to come, please let me know, because it won't do any good to let Andy know, because he won't go, because he doesn't have any sons. But let me know. I don't know what I'm going to do, because I usually can count on Chad and his boys, but Chad's like off in foreign lands or something, so you know, I don't know what that will look like, but if you'd like to be a part of that, we do that in season and out of season. And but there are bigger questions that go with that. And when I said taking a look at our celebrations, these are some things I wrote down. What have we learned together about fathering? When I think about my friends, particularly the ones that I was just in Canada with, along with one of my grandsons, I thought, we've learned a lot of things about fathering. So that's a great conversation together. What are our connections and our expressions within our father-son relationship? Which obviously the greatest example of that is Jesus and how Jesus interacted with his father. And we'll be talking about that kind of in the months to come. What remains for you to honor your father and your mother? That was a really good thing for me. I think I've referred to it, but when my dad died and my mom was gone, I don't have any regrets. I mean, I know that, I think my mom knew God, and I don't know about my father, but everything that I needed to say to my father, everything I needed to communicate to my father, and everything I needed to show my father, I was able to do. And that just gave me a great sense of peace. It does even now while I'm talking about it. And I know everybody doesn't get to do that. So, what remains for you to honor your father and your mother? You know, it's a big commandment. It says somewhere in the New Testament that's the first commandment with a promise. What's the promise? So that your days will be long in the land that the Lord your God has given you. And then what words need to be spoken? Ephesians 4 just talks about the different aspects of that. And what do I have to offer my neighbor with regard to father, son expressions, whether it's how I treat my kids or how I treat their kids or the conversations that I have? Because we're really running into some rough water with regard to fathers and sons and families right now. And I don't even think we've begun to see what's going to unfold maybe in the next 10 years. And a lot of you are going to be right in the middle of it because of some of the shifts that are happening. So just wanted you to think about that. What you can do with dad, do. And what you can't do, don't. And what you have no control over, entrust their souls to a faithful creator in doing what is right, which is something that we all seem to be stuck with, right? In so many ways, in so many parts of life. So I actually listened to my teaching last week, and I thought, wow, that was really good. So for those of you who listened, you're sharing my joy, and if you didn't get a chance to listen, you should, because I told the story about where we've come. And I thought, as I listened to it, I thought, this really feels like God told the story. That's what I liked about it. I didn't feel like it was me telling the story. I felt like it was God telling the story. So if you missed that part, you can find it at foxcreekcommunity.com. And I was so excited to see that Andy had it popped up there. And we've got a system now so you can find that like on Monday, so you don't have to miss 1 minute of Dave, which is really important. Today, and those sheets that are in the back, if you didn't pick one up last week, there are still some by the giving containers back in the corner. And so I'm going to use the same sheet this Sunday, last Sunday, and then next Sunday. And we're kind of talking about our story related to our 40 years together. So there's some back there. You can just feel free to jump up and get it. I think I got through the first two paragraphs, where we have come and what we have learned. And basically, to summarize what we have learned and what we have taught and what we have lived is basically kingdom community. Had a group of 20-something-year-olds at our house last night, and we've been having this conversation together about what does kingdom community look like? Because this particular group of young men and women are desiring community. They want to experience kingdom community. So we're talking about it together. What does it look like, and how does that occur? And they ask all these great questions about, well, how did you guys build that together? And I told them a story about you, JR, just because it kind of came to mind. I thought, this is how John and Patty and Bernie and I experienced community together and what we did together. So what we've learned and what we've taught and what we've lived is kingdom community. And that's different than just going to church. That's different than even being in a really vibrant church. Isn't that one of the conversations, vibrancy? It's all about connecting in a kingdom way with people, which we've talked a lot about. But that's all based on authentically who Jesus is. Not religiously, but authentically who is Jesus. always thinking about the answer to that question. I was meditating this yesterday at some point, and I thought, you know, what's really weird about being a believer is that I feel like I've been pretty dedicated to God. I've been pretty intentional. I mean, teaching on a consistent basis has been one of the best things for my heart, you know, and so I have all of these things that constrain me, you know. My life kind of constrains me to follow God. But even in all of that, I look at my heart and I go, my heart goes up, my heart goes down. My heart goes up, my heart goes down. Sometimes it's hot and sometimes it's cold. And I recognize that that is part of the nature of the kingdom. What is not a part of the nature of the kingdom is being lukewarm. I was thinking about where Jesus talks about that in Revelation. Because you are lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. One translation, vomit you out of my mouth. Another translation, spew you out of my mouth. Because basically, when somebody's lukewarm, it is the worst thing that you can experience as a believer. But hot and cold, those are good things. Those are good things for your heart. And I was thinking about how authentic that has made my relationship with God. Because I don't pretend that I'm hot when I'm cold. And I don't pretend that I'm cold when I'm hot. I accept it each day for what it is. Who's Jesus authentically? What does kingdom heart life look like? Asking that question, I'm asking that. I'm continuing to ask that question. I love having this conversation with people who are just emerging into that and saying, we want community too. What does that look like? And then third of all, how do I make authentic God connections? And that's what kingdom spirituality is. That's what authentic kingdom community looks like. And the conclusion I've come to in my many years of hanging out with Christians and going to different Christian group things, leadership things, whatever. Also what I've experienced through Pulse, because I've gotten to meet people from all around the community with all different churches, all different backgrounds, that what we've experienced related to kingdom community, and I don't think we're the only ones who have kingdom community. I wouldn't want to frame it that way at all. But what we have learned is that, and what we believe is that kingdom community has value to God. And it also has value to our city. So that's kind of the what we have learned part. Now we come to the part of, well, what are we going to do about it? You know, you can't like look back and go, oh, those were the good old days, you know, because they really weren't. You know, I think I mentioned last time we were together that the first 10 years starting out of fellowship, there was just a lot of conflict. And there was a lot of, no, this is the way you should do it. And this is the way you should do it. And I remember one guy looking at me one day and basically telling me, yeah, your kids are only 5 years old. I have 8-year-old kids. You don't know what you're talking about. And I thought, whoa, you know, that's pretty radical. You know, even though I was searching the scriptures just like he and his wife were searching the scriptures. So what can we do? What can we do looking forward? And one of the things that excites me is that we are a multi-generational group. And I want to talk about that a little bit. And it's not just the group that gathers here. But because we have paid attention to the kingdom, we are a multi-generational group. So when I hear a story about Travis in Minneapolis, I think, yes, yes, he is. He's pursuing God. And when I hear a story about Luke Hawthorne, you know, over in the Quad Cities, and I think, yes, yes, this is what we were made to do as families. We were made to see the kingdom grow. And when I hear stories about our kids that haven't figured it out yet, I go, yes, God will have to meet them on the road. And that's the nature of kingdom life. And so I'd just like you to turn over. Last week talked about a passage in Peter. Today I want to talk about something in Timothy. And Peter in 1 and 2 Timothy, those are good books because they're looking back on 50 years of Jesus experience, okay? Those books were not written early on. They weren't written right after Jesus ascended. They were written after these guys had lived for a number of decades. And they're looking back, and you find that particularly in 2 Timothy, because it appears to be Paul's swan song. Isn't that what they call it? It's kind of like, oh, you know, I'm looking back, and my nostalgia is coming out. And 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. So think about this, not about the nostalgic part, but what he's passing on to Timothy. Because the last thing that Paul wanted to see happen was for everything that he labored for fall apart. It wasn't what he wanted to see, any more than a mom or a dad wants to see that. Anybody who, more than a person who builds a business, wants to see it turn to garbage, you know, 5 years after you've retired or moved on or kicked the bucket. 2 Timothy 4, verse 6. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. And remember what a drink offering is. The offerings would get done. You didn't have to do drink offerings. They were offerings of gratefulness. So once the offering was on the altar and being offered, then you would go up before it was ignited and you would pour drink offerings on top of it. So they were voluntary. They came out of gratefulness. So Paul knows his Hebrew history. He knows his Bible, as it were. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering. I can feel it happening to me. He's older. He's recognizing that things are changing, and he can feel himself being poured out on top of what? Well, the offering that Christ made. I'm being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight, the soldier. I have finished the course, the runner, and I have kept the faith, the farmer. That's how Paul looked at a summary of his kingdom life. It wasn't just the fact that he believed the right things. These are all movement-oriented things as you look at them. I fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. And I want to encourage you with that today because that's what it's all about. You know, whether you're my age or whether you're 20 years old, it's all about this. It's all about fighting the fight, finishing the course, keeping the faith that God has given to you. Now, is it individualistic in the sense that it doesn't fit in with the fight that belonged to Paul? No. There are so many similarities to it. You know, so many overlaps of it. But it is very individualistic because I know what God has asked from me. So I just would encourage you to ask that question. Continue to ask that question. What is it? What is it that God wants from me? And then this beautiful verse in verse 8, in the future, there's laid up for me, set aside for me. You know, it's like it's in a treasure chest somewhere. There's set aside for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord himself, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Well, what does that mean? Well, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, that's part of it. But when you love the appearing of Jesus, that means that everything you're doing today, what's the date? Okay, September 22nd. I lose track. The things that you're doing today are all connected with that crown of righteousness after you have fought the good fight, finished the course, and kept the faith. Those are all being a part. Those crowns are like, you know, they made a bazillion of them in heaven, and they're just kind of sitting in a room with our names underneath them. They're like living crowns. They're alive. It's easy to look at them as objects rather than looking at them as something that is more reflective of what heaven is going to be like than what Earth was going to be like. And so in that sense, today, you have the opportunity, and I have the opportunity to add to and accentuate that living crown. And I don't know if this is before or after we take, I think it's in a hymn, isn't it? Casting down our golden crowns before the glassy sea. I don't know. Is it before that? Is it after that? Are we going to get our crowns? And are we going to go, wow, the crown of righteousness. I don't deserve it. Boom. It goes down before the glory of the one who has the river of praise that's already flowing to him. That's what Selah means. Lift it up to the highway of the river of praise that's before the throne of God. So, not to back off, and that passage has been very helpful to me to remind me what's at stake and to remember that my life is defined about the way I fight the fight, the way I compete in the race, and the way I cultivate as a farmer and wait for the early and latter rains. So don't back off. Second thing, invest. Invest. What has God given you to invest? Well, he's given you your time, and he's given you your talents, and he's given you your treasures. Easy to remember that way. That's why I read this in a book once. I thought that's the way to remember it. Time and talents and treasures. And take those things that have been allotted to you. You know, I'm not sure that we've all gotten the same allotment, you know? And I'm not talking about, you got 5, I got 10, whoa, this guy over here got 20. I'm talking about, I think it's much more unique to each one of us. I think each one of us has been given time and talents and treasures that we're not supposed to bury in the ground, but we are supposed to invest in the great stock market of life, the relational stock market of life, the things that are tied into our crowns. And then also become captivated with kingdom spirituality, because here's the trajectory, you know. People start out following God, they're really interested in following God, and that lasts for a while, and then when people get older, it starts going downhill, except for people who have been captivated by kingdom spirituality. And as their bodies fall apart, and as their minds don't work the way that they did, and as that process happens, being captivated with king and kingdom is what gets people through. Talk to somebody who's 95 years old that is looking forward to where they're going, who's excited about where they're going, because the kingdom has captured their imagination. They might not use exactly the same words that I would use, but that's what's bringing them their hope. So that made me think about our fellowship and asking the question, what do we have to offer? And of course, I'm trying to think ahead. You know, I'm thinking that I'm probably going to work actively for another 5 years, and then I'll probably semi-retire, just because, you know, it drives me crazy, you know, to see people like in their 80s doing things that they probably should be doing other things, okay? And that's what I'm looking forward to doing. I'm looking forward to doing the other things. You know where my heart's going right now? It's going toward baby boomers. I understand them. I get them. We sing the same songs. We know the same poetry. We've experienced the same life. And I wonder if that's what God is going to do with me. And I thought the other day, you know, I was thinking about Jerry being over in Edgewater, and I thought, when's going to be the first day that God says, Dave, I want you at Edgewater? Not as a resident necessarily, but over in talking and talking about the things that boomers understand and experience. I mean, can you imagine if they actually had a pastor show up and I'm like singing loving spoonful songs and, you know, smoke on the water? I mean, I got a million of them. What do we have to offer? And so I kind of divided this down by ages, because we're intergenerational. Right? I don't know if I mentioned last week that I just read a book about Generation Z, and that was really interesting for me to read that, because I'm realizing I'm going to have to get up to speed in this last 5 to 10 years that I'm active, because I have to change some of my language. I have to change some of my perspective, because it is changing around me, so I've got to get ready for it. But what our commitment is, and will continue to be in the future, and we can see this being picked up by younger elders now, as well as other people in our fellowship. When kids are 0 to 18 years old, what's the goal? They need examples around them, right? Don't we need to see examples? Do you think they're going to see solid examples in school about what it means to live your life for God? They're going to see some. But how many out of 100 are going to be those kind of relationships? How many of them here out of 100 look like our relationships do with God? And I'm incredibly grateful for what my sons and what my daughter and what my grandchildren have been able to see in this community, as well as being a part of the community in Des Moines. But being examples. At some point, I realized like 5 or 10 years in that I was watching little kids run around, because we were just having like, they're popping out like flies, you know. And they were walking around and we were meeting all these different weird places, you know. We met in I'm not even going to say where we met. We met in different places as we've been on the journey. And I can remember kids walking around and I thought, all of a sudden we have all these people who are under 3.5 feet tall. And I wasn't just thinking of Patty either. Oh, she's not here. You'll have to take that home to her. Anyway, I was looking at these kids and I thought, I have to make an adjustment here. And so I went into like 10 or 15 years of where I started talking with people and having conversations like this. Or I started getting down on one knee. And I had 3 of them this morning with some of the children that are here. And I try to pick out 2 or 3 kids every week to have that face-to-face conversation with. And I don't know, are there any fosters in here right now? All right, just you, Jerry. I pumped Dawson for information on their family, and I got all kinds of information. But that whole idea about looking to connect, you know, you can connect with somebody who's 3 years old. You can connect with somebody who's 5 years old. That's part of the beauty of being in an intergenerational fellowship. And last time I looked, little kids really respond well to grandmother and grandfather type. Although I have one little girl in my life right now, I'm really working hard to get her to respond to me. But she's going to love me. She's going to love me. She already does. She just doesn't know the extent of it. So that whole idea, that's one of the things that we have to offer, being examples and being a community example. And that's what your teachers are doing right now. You know, we've got 40 different teachers that are spending time with our kids, and that doesn't even include the people who spend time in the nursery, but we're laboring together. It's not just a matter of saying, well, we need to have a nursery and we need to have classes. It's a matter of connections. And so I went into Miss Julie's class this morning because and I was thinking, I wonder what Miss Julie's doing today. And I walk in and somebody has written on the board there. It says, "Good morning, Miss Julie," with a heart on it, you know, whatever, which I assume was an adult because it was a perfect heart. And I walked in and walked up to a table, and some of your kids are you know, they're just loving Play-Doh. Thank God for Play-Doh. And, you know, even though he's a great Greek philosopher, I think in this context, he's had way more impact. And they're in there, and I look at one little girl, and I said, "What's that?" And she goes, "A waffle." I look down at her Play-Doh, and it looks like a waffle. I don't know how she did it, but she's got this waffle. But there's all of these opportunities that we have to interact with each other from an intergenerational perspective. And that's something that hopefully those of us who are in our 60s and in our 70s are going to help you with. Operator, information, get me Jesus on the line. being examples. Have you ever heard that song? Look it up. Especially Brother Tom or Brother Andrew. And I mean, he goes for it. It is so totally awesome. So being examples as they launch. And then what I'm noticing with 15 to 24-year-olds, and this is why it was really good for me to read this Gen Z book. It's a Barna book, so it's got all these facts and studies in it. So those were encouraging because the conclusion I came to when I read the studies is that we're all still human. It doesn't matter what generation we're in. We share so many things, and we can't really get away from it, even though we are obsessed with, you know, generational identity. But in 15 to 24, providing space for conversations appears to be something that's being struggled with. And this is something we talked about the next group, the 25-year-olds that were at our house last night, because they're bumping into that. And how do you provide space for conversations when everything is so polarized and people are so angry and they're so intimidated? How do you provide space for conversation? So that's a challenge. So what do we have to offer? We know a lot about that, don't we? Don't we know a lot in our kingdom community about making space for people who are different than we are? Who have different perspectives than we do? I think so. I could write a book. I won't, but I could. And then in that next group of people, the idea of planting seeds and having faith conversations, because once you are engaging in conversation, you know, what's your role in building the kingdom? What's your kingdom mustard plant going to look like? What's that special ingredient or recipe of who God has made you to be? What's that going to be when it comes to fruition and to growing? And the question these guys were asking last night is, what does that look like in relationships with other people? How do we, my word, co-labor with people in that? So what do we have to offer? Being examples to little guys, providing space for conversations as our kids are emerging. I mean, think about this even from a parenting perspective, being able to continue to have relevant conversations when your kids are, your teenagers are going, ever had that happen to you? I was speaking not so much from what was done to me as what I did myself. And then planting seeds and faith conversations and growing in those relationships. And then as that happens, you know, how do we, as we have our children and as we establish our families, how do we co-labor on that and how do we experience catalyst relationships? You know what a catalyst is? It's somebody who helps something occur. You know, I have great friendships with my friends. I love their kids. Because we were catalysts in each other's lives, whether it was father-son, father-daughter, camps, family get-togethers, you know, Bible studies, whatever it was. We experienced those opportunities together. And that's the challenge when you're like in your 40s. Don't do that alone. Do that together with other people who are learning the same things that you're learning. And then finally, I love this because I realized somewhere in my 50s that, oh, it's time for me to be wise now. Not just in principle, because, you know, I was pretty sharp when it came to understanding the scriptures. Raised a few kids. They still love me. They still talk to me. They were establishing their household. But what God has been impressing on me is, yeah, yes, Dave, I've made you wise. But that doesn't mean that you're kind. And so, I'm looking at my friends, and what's the natural trajectory for older people? World smaller, attitude crabbier. And so, I find myself on a consistent basis with me. Don't do it, Dave. Don't do it. Don't go back to your crabby roots that you learned from your crabby dad, you know, and don't live that way. Take the wisdom that God has given you and use that wisdom in kindness in whatever way you can. So to me, that's practically defining what it means to be in an intergenerational kingdom community. Are we perfect? No, you know that. Just ask all the people who've come and gone. You know, only half the people that come here stay here. Yeah, because things happen, you know, and that's okay. So I think I'll shut it off there. If you look at your sheet, our roots, where we've come, what we have learned, and we're starting to talk now about what the future holds for our multi-generational body, but I wanted to take a little bit of a time to explain kind of the continuum that's there. It's not that I don't still engage on all of those different levels. It's just that we have the luxury now. You know, when we started our fellowship, you know how many people we had over 50? Zero. Zero people over 50. And now we've got this asset of people who can give kind wisdom. And so I wanted to paint that picture, and then you have to look at yourself and go, okay, well, where do we fit in that picture? And what's happening inside of me? And if you remember one of the first things, let's see if I can go back to it, because I'm... That's good enough. If I go anywhere else, I'll keep talking. You don't want that.